Warning. This story includes materials that are classified your ears only due to disturbing content. Other times we are quite silly and really just a hoot. Unless you are cleared for graphic depictions of sex, violence, or dirty words, this never happened. We were never here. It should go without saying that this is not intended for kids, but we're still saying it for their sake and for yours. We don't always play nice. You've been warned.
The hostile personality. Manifestation of the subject's repressed urges. We use a special property of the fissure beneath Blue City called the Lacuna to erase these urges and...
You deserved it.
Everyone is briefed before our mission.
Let's say, hypothetically, you had orders to do something you think is incredibly dangerous and stupid.
But you forgot most of it.
Static. That's about all we know.
You sound lost, Agent. Strange events, meetings with specific personalities and the like are referred to as escalations.
Yes, it's bad.
Like a chess game.
Static is bad. That's what static is.
Unfortunately, we're not sure what the pieces do or how to play in any meaningful capacity.
Badness.
Things can get out of hand fast.
I will make your life intolerably painful.
The conflict. Some kind of ongoing war.
Blue City is beautiful.
Embedded spies.
In the way noir films and dusty cathedrals are beautiful.
A series of bombings.
Even the most colorful things are drab and pasty.
It stays that way.
The sky above.
Passers-by are dressed formally in styles decades behind the time.
Citizens avoid talking about the Spider-Man.
Even the cutting edge of fashion here comprises old suits and dresses.
Once they're on you, there's no shaking them.
Haven't been seen since 1985.
Either you dispatch of the HP or you eject before you end up dead.
Unavailable. In the interim, please submit all questions in written format. Agent Tucker, thank you for filling out the questionnaire. We appreciate everything you've done for the company, and we'll be happy to answer your questions.
Question number one. If feedback is a danger, why brief the agents outside of the city?
This is your first long-term dive into Blue City. You are essentially in shock right now. You will adjust. Your memory will improve with each mission you undertake.
Question number two. Our investigation methods seemed unproductive. Please advise.
The official report indicates a slow start. Halfway through the mission, we began logging a steady series of escalations. Based on your own account post-mission, you left before things got too hairy, and all the agents survived intact. Even you. Nobody else has any idea what's going on in there, Tucker. Only you and your team. Work together on this with them. Find out what you can about Blue City. And keep asking questions.
Question number three. Agent Barker was vital to our mission. Why were we not advised of his existence?
Roll call was part of the briefing. When we lay everyone down for insertion, all agents are positioned in such a way as to see all other agents from their own slab. Sykes says this helps the team maintain coherence. We do not know how Agent Barker was displaced. This has been forwarded to the Omega Department in Mythography. Unless they come back with an all-clear, keep it under your hat.
Question number four. Why was Agent Turner inserted separately?
Agent Turner had difficulties during insertion. Her medication levels had to be adjusted before she could continue.
Question number five. What is Control's assessment of the mission?
Mission accomplished with no official fatalities. Out of all the agents, you took the greatest amount of risk. Control would like you to continue to be assertive, but try not to endanger yourself.
Question number six. If asked for the present location of a hostile personality, what are the chances that this is in Control's knowledge?
Mythography and CME can provide feedback based on the subject's profile and the current state of Blue City based on what we can observe about the subject's particular vector.
Question number 7. What are the consequences of asking where the hostile personality is, and of Control's answer?
Forcing contact with a hostile personality significantly decreases the chance of mission success. The reason for this varies depending on the mission, but sometimes it can mean mission failure, or even death.
Question number 8. What are the most effective forms of support to request?
Strategies vary between mentors. I'm sure Senior Agent Baxter would be happy to assist you.
Question number 9. Why did the hostile personality turn into a centipede?
The metamorphosis is universal among hostile personalities. Mythography has various conflicting theories on this, but officially endorses none of them. Whatever the reason, the hostile personality is a manifestation of the subject's repressed urges. We use a special property of the fissure beneath Blue City, called the Lacuna, to erase these urges and text omitted the subject.
Question number 10. To what was the hostile personality referring to when it stated, "You deserved it"?
The subject was a burglar with a variety of psychoses associated with his repressed guilt. These seem to be appropriately bitter words from an HP, based on my experience.
Question number 11. Are there long-term effects of escalation or static? If so, what are they?
Text omitted. Agent Chaffer, thank you for filling out our questionnaire. We appreciate everything you've done for the company and would be happy to answer your questions. We are pleased to inform you that the Directorate has officially lifted your probationary status. No charges will be filed against you, and your association with Text Omitted will not be held against you during your long, illustrious career as a mystery agent.
It appears that the layout of Blue City is quite malleable. Is there any way we can alter the topography of the city to suit our needs?
That would be a question for Mythography. I can only say that while some structures remain, no matter the vector, others are unique to that vector only. Perhaps we can get you in touch with their beta department, the people who maintain the map, to assist you in performing a more in-depth analysis.
Establishing contact with Control is difficult even under ideal circumstances. Is there any way that supplies, weapons, first aid, autos, petrol, etc., could be inserted with us? It would alleviate the need for us to constantly requisition supplies.
This has been attempted during previous missions and proved to be detrimental. Agents possessing certain items may escalate too early or too often if they happen to be too aligned with the subject's vector.
In general, dissemination of information to us agents was, to put it mildly, substandard. How can we be expected to carry out our mission if each agent is not thoroughly briefed?
Each agent was thoroughly briefed before insertion, you included. The adjustment period you are experiencing becomes more manageable with each mission. Agents experience marked improvement in memory and recall by their third mission. Please stick with the program no matter what resistance you may encounter. Agent Barker, thank you for filling out the questionnaire. We appreciate everything you've done for the company and would be happy to answer your questions.
Number 1. The people of the neighborhood, Heights. Who were they? Anyone? No one? And why did they react so violently towards us when we recognized them, and furthermore, when we apprehended the hostile personality?
The actions of personalities are very hard to forecast. They are different in each scenario. Mythography has various and conflicting theories regarding the nature of personalities, but no sure answers are forthcoming. We were wondering about the violent reaction ourselves. Did any of the personalities physically attack the agents, or did they merely crowd them and wreck the truck? Would the escalations have been the same regardless of whether you had captured the hostile entity?
Regarding later insertion, is this protocol typical? Either way, does it come with risks or side effects? And were they what I was suffering when I came to?
This information has been relayed to Delta and is currently classified. Do not speak of this until we get our story together, Agent. We wouldn't want to sound inconsistent. As for side effects, you seem to be experiencing only the normal amounts of memory loss, disorientation, and text omitted. Throughout the mission, your vitals remained very stable. Beta lost you for a little while on the map, but this is a pretty common occurrence.
Question 4. Exactly what is static, and what are the results of raising it, lowering it, or generally knocking it out of sync?
It is impossible to be out of sync with static. That's the official word. Follow it. If we really need to go over Mystery Agent 101, I will remind you yet again, escalations only raise static as the mission progresses. It doesn't lower until the HP is disposed of and all agents have been ejected. and all agents have ejected.
Question number 12, to Senior Agent Baxter, per Control's recommendation. What are the most effective forms of support to request from Control during a mission? Similarly, what are the most versatile forms of gear to requisition? A gun is simple, straightforward, and great for shooting people, but does not aid much else. Have any agents experimented with grappling hooks or other implements capable of assisting both conflict and tactical movement? Question number 13. Why is an entire mission composed of novice agents without a seasoned agent who will remember the briefing, procedures, and protocols?
Experience is the best teacher. No more questions until after the mission, Tucker. Signed, Senior Instructor Agent Snyder.
A series of contoured beds, the slabs, are positioned in an open circle. A single additional slab is positioned to face away from the agents. Lab-coated and suited individuals dart about, dotted here and there with comfortably eccentric hotshots with their tattoos, piercings, designer t-shirts, or patched elbows, depending on the generation. The lighting is such that it's difficult for the mystery agents to see anything but each other and any fast-moving staff that come within their circle. IVs have already been connected and some 16 electrodes are scattered over each agent's respective body, limiting movement to around the bed. The first tingles of the drug cocktail that allows insertion feel a lot like a sleepless night, a 3 a.m. kind of feeling. But the agents find themselves otherwise lucid. The agents also realize that their memory is clipped prior to the point of awakening. What had happened between then and now? Tucker racks his mind trying to make sense of the situation. Nothing comes to him. What's going on here? I'm not under, but my memory has slipped. Is the insertion botched? And who's that one for? He asked the room in a kind of general way, pointing towards the slab turned away. What's the mission status? He asks, almost as an afterthought. Try to stay calm, mate, says Chaffer, scratching underneath his chin and yearning for a Chesterfield. Tucker snaps back. I'm as calm as I can be given what I remember, which isn't much, and calm isn't getting any answers. As the last words leave his mouth, Tucker realizes what he's saying is logically inconsistent, but chooses not to correct himself in hopes of not distracting from his need for explanation. Barker looks around carefully, blinking slightly. What is this? Chaffer? Tucker? Ah, I can't move, he says, trying to lift his arm and sit up, feeling like his muscles are jelly. He looks to Chaffer, noting his apathetic but perhaps wiser take on the unsettling situation, then to the shadows at all the scattering lab coats. He lays his head back and sighs loudly, shifting to make himself comfortable. Well, here we go again. He keeps some choice judgments regarding what he assumes to be their methods of insertion, notably the memory manipulation, to himself, for now. Seeing Barker awake as well calms Tucker to an extent. None of the three of them were already inserted, then something had gone catastrophically wrong. Or this always happens and he just doesn't remember. He leans back. So what now, crew? Wait and watch them, says Barker, nodding to the figures darting around just outside the field of vision. I have a feeling this will all go away and we'll wake up somewhere again. Hopefully not in another basement, he says, somewhat irritatedly. Tucker laughs. I was talking to them, not you. But if you want to be my crew, I could do worse. Thanks, Barker offers sarcastically, rolling his eyes briefly. But yes, he says, turning his attention to the lab coats and more assertively attempting to communicate with them directly. Is everything going according to plan? Can you even hear us? From the drug deep in shadow steps a man in a familiar black suit. An easily recognizable button clings to his lapel. Regarding each of the three brightly lit slabs in turn, he makes his rounds. Each slab and occupant is worked over with the mechanic's engaged yet distant gaze. Good, good. As per my official response, Tucker, it's a side effect. You've got all the faculties we need, he says confidently. Chaffer comes into his view. Good day, sir, he says, perhaps disingenuously. Cheers, says Chaffer, flashing Snyder a smile that's as thin as a garrote. Nice to see you too, Agent Barker. Snyder gestures at a point of further darkness and chemically induced haze, a series of dark lumps, the unlit portion of the circle. He'll be pleased to know that one of your classmates will be joining us. Excellent work, Barker. As we understand it, you're the one who gained the HP's confidence long enough to pin the little bastard. He offers a generic shoulder pat. Tucker begins to unceremoniously drum the fingers on his left hand. So you're the Q&A man. Good to know. I don't suppose you got a chance to pass along my question to Senior Agent Baxter. I haven't met him or her yet, or I don't remember doing so. He trails off, frustrated with the futility of thought at this point. Is this roll call, or what passes for an icebreaker? Snyder's eyes narrow briefly before he warms again. His attention shifts back to Tucker. Neither, Agent Tucker. My hope is that this will be the last time I have to personally oversee your insertion. As for your question, you're not the first agent to think of this. It's best if you acquire equipment as needed in mission. Logic and utility are relative terms in Blue City. Weapons tend to be the most immediate need in any situation. Suppose a grappling hook or other means of egress might help if that's your strategy. Personally, I prefer a gun, he says, patting one side of his jacket. Roll call was done during your briefing. At your current level of psychic proficiency, it's doubtful you remember much. Even now, there's a risk of feedback should I brief you again. We do not foresee any more surprise insertions, so you should meet everyone in the waiting room. If that's all, agents, I believe it's sleepy time. Tucker nods lethargically. A hook in the back could still ruin a day or two, but if that's all, I imagine I'll see you on the other end. We'll get this one just like we got the last one. Tucker tries to relax, but he's still bothered by the seeming pointlessness of this little powwow. Chemically-induced sleepiness weighs on the agent's eyelids. Those who are not already laying down begin losing muscle control, their speech slurring, tongues lolling about as they begin to drool on themselves. Snyder says, awkward, I know. But without the drugs, you might experience somnambulism mid-scenario. You know, sleepwalking. He steps back into the darkness to continue observing out of view. Tucker becomes confused as he can no longer remember what it was that had been bothering him. No sooner had the confusion begun to set in than he simply lays back, unthinking, waiting for the next moment, allowing his consciousness to go where it would. Technicians help adjust the agents on their respective slabs. A set of buckle straps are worked over each limb, two more covering their hips and chest, respectively. The agents drift off, finding themselves in a familiar place with two unfamiliar individuals.
The waiting room. A cramped, white stucco waiting room, uniformly lit in dingy, fluorescent light that gives everything a golden blue sheen at its edges. There are no magazines, books, or pictures on the wall, only a series of fold-out metal chairs on cheap, nicked linoleum. On the far side of the room is a thick oak door with no discernible hinge or handle. Pre-insertion agents materialize wearing their freshly pressed black mystery agent suits, perfectly groomed and feeling refreshed, if a tad formal. The black sunglasses are optional, but advised, and by default, agents appear wearing them. Agent Shields looks around at the bare room, realizing that he is the first one here. He takes a seat and settles down to wait patiently, wondering how long he'll be here before someone else shows up. Wait a minute. How do I know that someone else is going to show up? He wonders to himself as his mind goes fuzzy. His question quickly forgotten, he settles down to wait, a nagging feeling in the back of his head. Agent Seals materializes, a look of confusion crossing his face as he glances around. His eyes quickly scan Agent Shields, then the door. Looking back to Agent Shields with a slight tilt of the head, he opens his mouth as if to speak, then turns his body a little, glancing at the chairs. Seals sits down on one of the chairs at a rather long conversational distance from Shields, looking at the other agent carefully. All right. What's going on? He asks, after a lengthy pause, a southern drawl evident in his suspicious tone. Agent Tucker materializes and looks around. Chaffer materializes and, without saying a word, lights a cigarette and plants it between his lips. He regards Tucker and Barker with a nod. When he sees the newcomer, he removes his shades and reveals keen, shale-colored eyes. I'm Agent Chaffer. Tucker turns to Agent Chaffer. Did you remember two new agents? I only saw one additional slab. Seals looks up at the other agents as they materialize in, his appearance turning more confused and defensive with each new arrival. Two, huh? He thinks to himself, taking a moment to look at his own clothing. I thought these guys were here to interrogate me or something. I guess I'm one of them. Hello, he offers to the rest of the agents, his tone curious but unsure. Agent Tucker, Tucker begins, introducing himself, and then moves on. Agents Chaffer and Barker. We were only expecting one additional agent based on... Well, don't worry about what on. However, two of you make sense in a way. Do you remember any of the briefing? Seals pauses, slowly dragging a hand along his jaw until the hand covers his mouth. He stares for a moment, his expression turning to a sort of fearful realization. No, I don't. I don't know what I'm doing here, he drawls, looking rather embarrassed as he meets Tucker's gaze. Well, I'm glad that's out of the way, Tucker muses. What are your names? He smiles involuntarily as he has vague memories of a war movie he saw once. Seals tilts his head in thought. Well, that's one thing I remember, at least. Name is Seals, I think. It's not the name I'd have picked for me, but if that's my name, that's my name. Agent Barker looks at Tucker and Chaffer, nodding briefly in acknowledgement. He adjusts his hat slightly, grinning slightly to himself. Good to have this again, he says, somewhat to himself. And of course not waking up with bruised ribs and ripped clothes in a dark, dank basement, he says, chuckling briefly. He shifts his eyes to the new agents, looking them up and down. More agents. Good to see you're getting better treatment than my last mission. Is this your first? Yeah, this is my first mission, I guess, Seals says to Barker. He ponders for a moment, assuming I'm remembering correctly. He shakes his head, briefly running a hand back through his hair in obvious frustration. Barker nods his head in understanding, removing his sunglasses from his front pocket and unfolding the earpieces. Don't let it bother you, Agent. We're all just as confused in this together. You let that eat at you and you could compromise the mission. Just remember, this, he says, tapping the badge on his lapel, goes on the HP. That's all that matters, he says, slipping his sunglasses on, musing quietly on his final statement. What Barker said. Your partner there talk? Tucker asks, looking at the other new face in the room. I don't know, says Seals, glancing at the silent agent. He hasn't said a word since I got here. Also, HP? Hostile personality, Tucker responds, leaving it simply at that. Interesting, Seals says. So what are we all sitting around waiting for, he asks, looking at the door. You said something about a briefing. I assume this briefing already happened, or what? He looks more relaxed now that he knows everyone else is in the same boat with him. I assume it has, but it may have not. Pretty soon, we will be somewhere other than here. That is what we are waiting for, Tucker explains. Though I don't remember it taking this long. Seals gets up from his seat and walks over to the door, moving to open it. He has a funny feeling that it may be a bad idea, and hesitates in case one of the other agents confirms that it's a bad idea. Shields says, I'm Agent Shields, by the way. Sorry about the slow response. I'm still trying to acclimate. This is also my first mission, at least as far as I know. Shields lights a cigarette and takes a long drag. Unfiltered? That seems wrong somehow. Not that anything about this situation feels right. Seals digs at the edges of the door with fingertips, furtive pushes, and clever manipulations. But it will not budge. The threshold is sealed, providing little to no leverage. Without something like a crowbar, there is no way of knowing whether this is simply a well-made door, or no door at all. There's no alarm bells and no clue as to what's on the other side. The air around them moves softly. There's a loamy smell, like freshly upturned soil. The ambient light around the agents extends from the walls, ceiling, and floor, consuming the group in all-pervading white. It's like staring into the sun while wearing a spectacularly efficient pair of shades.
Insertion complete. Mission 2, Bad Medicine. Subject, Hermietta Stahl, age 40. Status, incarcerated. Released to the company for text omitted. Crime, first-degree murder. 2 counts manslaughter. Poisoning. Occupation, pharmacy technician. Agent Seals. Subject likes flowers. Agent Shields. Subject preferred to target ex-lovers and strangers. Agents Barker, Chaffer, and Tucker. Control will have additional mission parameters. Please escalate until you are contacted. Agent Tucker. Senior Instructor Snyder has granted you temporary deep blue clearance. This is temporary only and will be revoked upon ejection.
Blue City is beautiful in the way noir films and dusty cathedrals are beautiful. Even the most colorful things are drab and pasty. The sky above a pale blue dotted with wispy indistinct clouds. Passersby are dressed formally in styles decades behind the times. Even the cutting edge of fashion here comprises old suits and dresses that haven't been seen since 1985. The city seems relatively empty and conspicuously lacking in advertisements. There are maybe a dozen people in sight, most of whom travel on foot. A few cars drift lazily by, old sedans in brown, ivory, and white. A single far-off bird circles overhead. Shields looks around, trying to get a feel for the place. Everything seems off somehow, as if he knows the way things are supposed to be, and this isn't it. So, does anyone know anything about this HP we're supposed to be going after? Seals starts a bit at his fingers, which were pressing hard around the hinges of the door, suddenly break through air? He takes a few steps back, glancing at the other agents briefly, then pausing to process what just happened. I take it this is normal? He asks, eyebrows raised. Insertion is complete, yes, says Barker, turning his attention to the new surroundings. He tugs the brim of his hat and looks around, hand in pockets, trying to note any buildings or people that seem out of the ordinary. No, he says, seeming to answer Shields, but still looking around. But it'll come, I'm sure. I admit to not being too experienced in the stage immediately after insertion. Agent Tucker, he says, looking to him expectantly.
Tucker looks around and recognizing the streets, slowly turns, stepping backwards and stretching his arms. He recognized the streets the way that one recognizes a McDonald's, not by actually knowing its layout or location, but by recognizing the common salient features. Maybe, maybe not. I have a memory suggesting that this mission deals with one Hermie at a stall. Aged 40, pharmacy technician and poisoner. I would assume this is the hostel, but it could also be the drugs affecting me. In any event, unless anyone else has information to volunteer, this is what we have to go on. Shields? Seals? What are your specialties? And does anyone have an inkling of where to start? I'm unaware of a place called pharmacy.
Shields says, my specialty is logistics and access. I'm not sure where the pharmacy is, but we could probably find out by asking around. Most of these people seem to have been to a pharmacy at some point. Shields looks around, trying to get his bearings and see if he can figure out which way to go. I don't see a pharmacy around here, and it doesn't look like the type of neighborhood to have one either. Seals takes a deep breath and lets it out slowly, his expression becoming determined as he realizes that, yes, this is happening, and he's part of a team. I don't know anything about the HP, but, well, I think I could get that information pretty easily if I wanted to, he says, seeming mildly surprised at the latter part of his statement as he thinks out loud. I also have a feeling that I'm pretty good with a revolver. My cover identity might be useful too, says Chaffer, enjoying the last bit of his Chesterfield. He flicks the cigarette to the curb and grinds it with his heel. The cold air sends a shudder through his thin body. He draws the collar of his long, dark coat up about his ears and looks around at the others furtively. Tucker nods.
Good thinking, Chaffer. Maybe with your new abilities, the city won't get all weird when we try talking to it. I recommend you do as you see fit with regards to the inhabitants. Can't hurt us any more than what I'd do.
The buildings line the streets, ubiquitous, unadorned, and uninteresting. The agents seem to have started facing one direction, seeing nothing but more streets ahead, block after block of this seemingly unending series of monolithic structures. It seems much the same in the other direction. There is the slightest detectable tilt in the pavement as they move and look about. Ahead, it slowly slopes downhill, while behind, it's elevated in tiny graduations. Well, Seal says, if there's a phone around here, maybe we could call information. He pauses, tilting his head in bemused thought. Control, I guess, for directions. If it's got a phone book with it, even better. He scans the current street for any sort of available phone, wandering to the nearest intersection to look around there as well. At the next intersection, Seals spots a phone just off to the right. There is no included phone book, and the booth itself is an enclosed plastic affair straight out of the 50s. Barker hmms and leaves Tucker and Seals to the phone.
He walks towards Shields, nodding at him and offering a gesture towards a small group of people walking on the sidewalk. Your idea is as good as any. Let's see what they have to say. Walking over and addressing them. Shields nods and steps in front of a random passerby. Excuse me, sir. I was wondering if you might be able to help us with some directions. A middle-aged man in a gray striped suit, a blue suitcase held firmly in his left hand, smoothly stops in front of Shields. There's half a candy bar in his right hand, the label a mess of blurry, unreadable letters. Sure thing there, buddy. Where are you headed?
Tucker follows a couple of strides behind Seals, curious to see what the newcomer was made of. Finding a phone as the first step was very similar to what he himself did on his first mission. He leans against a lamppost a few meters from the phone booth and just watches, instructing, "Go for it."
Seals raises an eyebrow and smirks a bit at Tucker as he picks up the receiver. He thinks for a moment, then stares at the keypad as he realizes he doesn't even know what number he needs to be dialing. "The heck?" he mutters, also realizing he can't read the keys themselves. With a huff of aggravation, he stabs a few keys with his finger, hoping he can somehow make it work the way he wants to through his own willpower. There is a moment of pause as the line rings for just a little too long, but Seals blinks as he gets through. Agent Seals here. I want to know where the most recent recorded position of our HP was. The line is open.
Insertion went very smoothly. We're all very impressed here, especially with you first-timers. Beta has located the HP in the cafe.
More quietly, Control says,
"We cannot tell you any more without breaking protocol. You do not have deep blue clearance."
Chaffer watches his fellow agents with an insect calm and decides to give his nom de plume a test drive. He scans the street corners for nearby pharmacy, hoping to get a bead on their HP as quickly as possible. "I could sure use a case of sample RX," he mutters. He approaches Tucker and says, "I'll be back, mate. I'm going to find the nearest pharmacy and see if my cover drums up any leads." Chaffer strains his brain trying to remember a dot on the map labeled pharmacy. Nothing immediately comes to mind. He assumes his counterfeit persona and assumes the personality of a gregarious salesman. Although the personalities politely nod to all of the agents, a few faces now regard Chaffer with familiarity and appreciation, tipping their hat and playfully punching his shoulder in passing. He warmly slaps the back of anyone who stops to chat. He laughs heartily at jokes that are utterly devoid of humor. Strangely enough, his accent seems to have melted too. As he talks to the random passerby, he continues to rack his brain for an address of a local pharmacy. Interacting with the crowd does not get Agent Chaffer / Mr. Corey any closer to a pharmacy. However, he does notice three familiar faces. A familiar couple, the man in pinstripes, the woman in a flapper dress, the Domingos, and an older gentleman in a deep navy suit, the barber from the Heights. None seem to fully recognize Corey, at least not in the way they might recognize Chaffer, from his last visit to Blue City. Seals can't help but smile as he gets some information that he wasn't sure he'd be getting. "Thank you," he says, his tone genuinely polite and businesslike, quite the contrast to the sarcastic suspicion he's carried so far in the mission. He hangs up the phone and steps out of the booth, giving a slight upward nod to Tucker to indicate a success. "Control wanted everyone to know the insertion went smoothly," he drawls. Then suddenly snickers to himself and mutters something under his breath about what she said. He sniffs absently and focuses on Tucker again. "They said Beta, whoever that is, located the HP in the cafe. Not very specific, is it? I'm getting the feeling we don't need specifics here, though." A slight tilt of Seals' head, indicating he's expecting some kind of confirmation. Tucker grins and slow claps.
"Well done, Seals. I was wondering what would happen when someone does that. You are correct. The cafe is a singular place, and we need no instructions or directions beyond that to find it." He walks back to the rest of the group, continuing to talk despite facing away. Under normal circumstances, I would say we should get there as soon as we can, subdue the hostile personality, and get out of here. Unfortunately, these are not normal circumstances. He casually gestures to Chaffer to come over when he's got a moment and walks up to Agent Barker and leans in close. What do you make of this whole escalation directive? It doesn't make sense to me. Last time they were telling us not to, and this time they're telling us to go nuts?
Seals follows Tucker closely at first, an eyebrow raised. Why aren't these normal circumstances? He asked, his pace slowing as they approach Barker, only half expecting to be answered as he sees Tucker seems more focused on speaking to Agent Barker at the moment. Although he remains a polite distance from the obviously private exchange, he stares overtly at the two agents with a quizzical look. His expression suggests he's not sure whether to be aggravated or not at his exclusion from whatever information they know. Barker lets Shields do the talking, hands still in his pockets, but watches the middle-aged man closely, his only experience with non-agents having been more than a little alarming. He continues watching Shields and the man, leaning his head towards Tucker. He briefly shakes his head, corking an eyebrow, then turns his head momentarily to Tucker's. Quietly, he says to Tucker, "Whatever we do, we should stay together. Last time was too close." Seals seems rather nervous, wouldn't want him or Shields flying solo. At least the HP didn't jump me when I was alone last time, and this one's supposed to be a killer. Either way, let's not take any chances with this one. Hopefully that's what Control meant, but why additional mission parameters after the briefing? I don't like the idea of a dangerous HP, let alone walking in blind and expectant. He either ignores or doesn't notice Seals, continuing to keep an eye on Shields and the pedestrian. He twists the ball of his foot into the sidewalk, seeming uneasy. Agent Tucker continues to converse with Barker in a hushed tone.
I agree. We should stick together. And we should keep an eye on the rookies. But what do you mean we shouldn't take any chances? Control's pretty clear that we should escalate. And escalation will result in additional instructions. I don't like the idea of a dangerous HP either, or walking in blind and expectant, but I fail to see how that bears on the current situation.
Barker shakes his head briefly again at Tucker, replying, I mean with the rookies specifically. If that means we have to carry them, fine. I meant that Seals worries me, and Shields seems quiet so far. Of course, Control sent us in here with 5 for a reason. Perhaps we'll need them. Barker sighs, shrugging his shoulders a bit. I just don't like it. We'll have to take it as it comes. Anyway, let me know if you get anything with Seals. Maybe check on Chaffer. I don't want to weird the others out with us talking for too long. I'll stay with Shields for a few. Tucker says something short.
That still says nothing about escalating.
Nods and finds another lamppost to lean against, waiting for Chaffer. Seals walks up to Tucker, officially annoyed now. So, what's going on? He asks, his annoyance obvious. We are all on the same team, right? What are you telling him that you can't tell us? He asks, jabbing a thumb toward Barker. Tucker meets Seals' gaze.
Let's say, hypothetically, you had orders to do something you think is incredibly dangerous and stupid. Now let's say that there are a couple of new guys who don't even know what the thing is, much less how dangerous and stupid it is. Further, this thing is dangerous to everyone, not just one person. You tell the new guys all about it? Really want to find out? Go ahead and throw that truck over there.
To the man with the blue suitcase, Shield says, Well, sir, my wife is sick, and I was supposed to pick up some medicine for her. Now I know the pharmacist who works at the pharmacy that I'm supposed to get it from, and I talked to them earlier today, but it seems that in my distress I forgot to ask Hermietta Stahl where the pharmacy is. I don't suppose you could give me direction, or failing, if you might happen to know Hermietta's address, so I could pick it up in case I get to the pharmacy too late. Shield smiles and tries to look distressed, something not too hard under the circumstances. The man nods along as Shields tells him his story. Well, sir, if you'd ask someone else, you'd probably be better served. I'm new here, you see. I didn't read any signs saying pharmacy, which is how things seem to work in this town. I wouldn't even know where to start looking. Aside from up, you know. Signs. The man adjusts his tie, eyeing Shields with suspicion. You and your wife live around here? We're new to the area as well. Just came to the city a week ago and haven't got my bearings yet. Shields replies smoothly. Well, thanks anyway. Have a good day, pal. It's my finest day, replies the man matter-of-factly. Candy bar? The suitcase opens, revealing some 100-odd chocolate bars in glossy red wrappers. Like the bar the man was working on when S.H.I.E.L.D. stopped him, these bars are labeled with a series of ever-shifting hieroglyphs, symbols that refuse to sit still long enough to be interpreted. The man waddles behind S.H.I.E.L.D.'s with the open suitcase splayed. Perhaps one of you would be interested in sampling a candy bar? Chaffer embraces his cover personality to the point of becoming him. Giles Corey, the charismatic extrovert, takes over where Chaffer left off. He finds that he has three choices for interaction. Engage the Domingos, Javier luxurious and almost wolf-like in his pinstripe suit, Cassandra excitable and engaging as she shares the world with her husband. Or greet the older man from the Heights, who has exchanged his blue bathrobe for a navy suit, something appropriate for stockbrokers, government workers, and bankers. Or seek comradeship with the candy bar salesman in his gray suit, breaking off from the agents and turning away, an obvious slump in his shoulders. Perhaps as Giles Corey, the agent would address each one separately, or perhaps he'd give them all a quick exchange of greetings and be done with it. Mr. Corey, Chaffer, approaches the gentleman in pinstripes and says, "Hiya! Long time no see!" He clutches the man's hand and flashes him a vulpine grin. "I haven't seen you since that sales convention a few years ago. Corey, Giles Corey. I never forget a face." His eyes shift to Mrs. Domingo and he says, "And this lovely lady must be Mrs. Domingo." Tucker continues to converse with Seals.
"Right now, I think we're going to ignore the additional information. As soon as Chaffer finishes his nosing around the city, we'll proceed straight to the cafe. If we locate the HP, we'll ask Control for guidance on how to proceed, or at least permission to engage. If you engage too soon, it's bad. How soon is too soon? We don't know. Hence the call. Unless I'm overlooking something obvious, that should be as much of a plan as we need at the moment. Oh, and one more thing. You never call from the same place twice."
"Why is it bad if..." Seals cuts himself off with a look of aggravation, glancing at the activities of the other agents. "Never mind. I guess me bothering you for info isn't going to move this mission along any quicker." As an afterthought, he quirks an eyebrow as he glances at the truck Tucker mentioned. The look in his eyes is not one of intent, but extreme curiosity. Tucker changes shoulders with which to lean against the lamppost and brushes his suit off idly.
"Static. That's about all we know."
"Don't suppose you could tell me what static is," Seal says, moving his attention from the truck to Tucker. "In this world, it sounds like it's bad."
"Yes, it's bad,"
Tucker explains.
"Static is bad. That's what static is. Badness."
Seals stares. "That's all you know about it? Or is this one of those things I shouldn't know because I'm a rookie?" Tucker smiles thinly.
"That's all we know. We have theories and observations, none of which is reliable. And for all we know better on the outside. The field isn't the place for lengthy explanations of information that's largely academic."
The aggravation leaves Seals' face and he nods a bit. "Yeah, good point. Kind of being an ass, aren't I? Sorry about that, but I have a feeling you understand." Seals relaxes, content, for the moment, to watch the other agents work. Mr. Corey's eyes stroll from pedestrian to pedestrian, taking the measure of each person. They return to the Domingos and the predatory grin returns to Corey's face. "So, please, tell me what the two of you socialites have been up to since I saw you last." Javier takes the lead as usual. "A pleasure, sir. Forgive me, I don't quite remember where we saw you last. Though you're as familiar as any citizen would be, I have not been in attendance to any sort of meeting as of late. Did we see you at the kinetoscope?" Cassandra steps around Javier. "Irrelevant husband. Surely he hadn't heard of the robbery or he'd have given us his sympathies already. Mr. Corey, our house was absolutely ransacked. Somebody loaded up our valuables in an old box truck and made it halfway out of the neighborhood. Rumor has it, visitors were involved," she says, lowering her voice in the present company. "Wouldn't be the first time.
We've already reported it to the authorities, though, as usual, they are of little help. Giles, in a rather maudlin display, says, "Oh, how terrible!" He removes his hat and shakes his head. "I am sorry to admit that this is the first time I heard of your ordeal. Such a travesty for such respectable folk as yourselves to endure such a violation. It's a sign of the times, I say. I do believe that I did see you at the kinetoscope. That was a while ago, wasn't it?" "Yes, it must have been. That must have been the night that you introduced me to Hermietta Stahl. She's interested in getting into my line of work, and I wanted to follow up with her to see how she's faring. Do you folks keep in touch with her?" "I introduced you to no such person," says Javier, "nor have I heard of her." "Perhaps you are mistaken." "Not to say we don't have a lot of friends," Cassandra is quick to add, "just not that one. Can you tell me more about this Hermietta? You're a salesman, right? Does she sell something too?" Barker steps towards the candy man and speaks up, taking his hands out of his pockets. "Sorry, sir, we're on a strict diet and can't stray from it even for candy bars such as those. Like my colleague mentioned, we're new and must be going before we miss our schedule. Excuse us." He tugs Shields' arm gently and heads towards the rest of the group, carefully urging Shields to follow at a quickened pace away from the very strange candy man. Agent Barker moves to lead Shields away from the strange, insistent personality. "Don't knock it till you try it," says the man, desperate now. "Come on, free... Ah, hell, forget it. Sorry to bother you." He tips his hat. Shields waits until the man walks away before joining the others. Asking didn't work out too well, and I think the people here are a bit suspicious. I remembered something else about the person we were looking for, and realized a couple of things as well. First, the subject likes to prey on either former lovers or people who are total strangers. Second, does anyone know the gender of the subject? Barker tips his hat respectfully at the Candyman and returns to Seals and Tucker, saying to Shields, "Be careful with the residents in here. They get jumpy and desperate pretty quickly. That was much faster than I thought, though. Figured we'd get more out of him." Barker looks to Seals, then Tucker, twisting his brow in slight frustration. "Interacting with these guys is almost pointless," Barker comments, calming down now. "Chaffer has a good edge, at least. Let's see what he can do. You two find anything?" Seals nods slightly to Barker in acknowledgement as he approaches. "Yeah, I called control. They said that our HP was located at the cafe. They also wanted everyone to know that insertion went smoothly." A distant look enters Seals' eyes for a moment. "Huh. I just remembered. The subject likes flowers." His brow furrows in frustration and he wonders out loud in a quieter voice, "Why do I know that?" Seals puts his hands in his pockets. "Anyway, that's all I have to offer at the moment." Tucker explains as he waits for Chaffer.
"The insertion drugs, they affect your memory. Anything you know that you don't know how you know is something that you knew before you were inserted."
My frustration with this whole system can't be summed up into words, Seals says to Tucker, smirking. "Thanks for the explanations, present and future." Watching Giles for a moment, Seals says quietly to Tucker and Barker, "Man, he's doing a heck of a job, isn't he? Smooth."
"The man sure can talk. This whole cover identity thing is new to us. It's something of a test run for him. I think it's working out quite a bit better than giving them the third degree suits, shades and all,"
Tucker says, grinning at the progress Chaffer seems to be having.
"Census workers, my ass, this is like night and day."
"It's definitely getting a better response than I got with the crazy candy bar guy," Shields says. "Is it always like this? I mean, with the personalities being suspicious and crazy."
"If by always you mean last time, yes, we're one for one,"
Tucker answers. Shields says, "Ah, I don't suppose anyone here has done this more than once, then? Seems like they would have paired up rookies with at least one veteran. Then again, considering how my memory feels at the moment, how would we know if someone was a veteran?" "I raised the same question during the debrief. I was told experience is the best teacher. Not quite an answer to the question now, is it?" says Tucker. Seals turns and paces a little bit, suddenly agitated by something. Stupid. Why send people on a mission and only give them the slightest bit of info? He throws his hands in the air, exasperated. He looks like he'd love to go on a huge rant, but forces himself to focus on watching passerbys instead. Man, I gotta keep myself under control or I'm gonna look like a complete idiot in front of these guys.
The payphone that Seals had used earlier begins ringing. Shields looks at Tucker while the phone rings. Let me guess, that's for us, right? He reaches over and picks up the receiver. Yes? Seals gives the phone a suspicious look. A payphone? Ringing? He absently pats at one of the pockets on his pants as though he wished there were something in it. I'm starting to want my revolver. The voice on the line says,
Your ass is in grass when you get back on my side, Agent. Never, ever use a phone twice in that godforsaken place. You never know who or what might be on the other line.
The caller blows a deep sigh. The receiver makes a swishing sound.
Oh well, no point in wasting more time. Mind you, this line is compromised, so let's not speak too plainly. No names, no travel plans, nothing they can use. So here's the brass tacks. I need you to escalate. That HP is watching you from all sorts of weird angles. Not with her eyes, but with her brain. With her subconscious. You've got to find out what makes that crazy bitch tick. What pushes her buttons and to act on it. Tell your friends that this is not a leisurely stroll. This operation costs thousands of dollars an hour to maintain. If I have to send in senior agent, it will really fuck things up. And I've already got you on my shit list as it stands.
Giles Corey continues to address the Domingos. Miss Hermietta Stahl is an upbeat pharmacy technician interested in selling prescription medications. I met, I believe, at the same function in which you and I last spoke. I might be mistaken, but I assume that you and your lovely wife introduced me to her. I'd like to meet her again and see if she's interested in working with me. Business is good enough for me to consider a protege. Well, we do have a tendency to get people together. But a technician? Do we know any sort of technician? Wonders Javier. We'd really, really like to help you, but we don't know how. Surely they've heard of her at the pharmacy or the hospital? Says Cassandra, standing up on her toes as if to see over the problem. Shields speaks into the receiver. Understood, Control. We will attempt to escalate and vacate the area. Is there any further information you can give us on the subject? Shields grits his teeth. They send us out with next to nothing and expect immediate results. God, I hate the brass. Seals furrows his brow a bit, leaning towards Tucker and Barker. Doesn't look like Shields likes what he's hearing. And escalate? I think we need to arm ourselves as soon as possible. Sensing that the Domingos are itching to end the conversation, Mr. Corey says, Well, I won't take up any more of your time. It has been lovely to see the two of you again. I should say that you both look absolutely wonderful. Could you, by chance, direct me to the nearest hospital or pharmacy? The city has changed so much since I was last here that I barely recognize the layout any longer. A flabby smile spreads across Corey's face. As the word hospital falls from Corey's blubbery lips, a smell cuts across the area just ahead of a warm breeze. A mix of almond and vanilla wafts about, touching each agent's nose in turn. Barker feels a slight tinge as something cold and metal shifts inside his jacket. Cassandra says, That's not where we get our... Javier shushes his wife. I'm sorry, friend. We've had no use for either facility. Should you wish to be entertained, on the other hand, we might be able to point a few places out for you. Cassandra winks provocatively. Come by our home in the Heights sometime, Mr. Corey. We could at least direct you there, for cocktails and other things. Maybe you could bring something of your own, Corey's rubbery face stretches into a broad smile and he says, I'd be delighted, but please let me know where you reside and I will be there. The directions are given in dreamlike terms.
explained in such a way that Corey/Chaffer could easily get there, though if pressed, he could not give a road-to-road description of where he's headed. It seems places can be found merely by imagining one's destination and knowing the general layout of the city. There is no left-right-straight causality. In this case, the Heights is essentially on the east side of town, only a few blocks from the bar. Therein lies the manor, a place that Barker had briefly spoken about during his last mission. "Straightforward enough, no?" asks Javier when he's done explaining. "We should probably be heading there now. I'd like to do a little more cleaning in case we have a guest," says Cassandra, tugging now at her husband's arm. "Of course, my dear." Another wink from Javier. "We hope to see you soon." As the vanilla smell passes under Shield's nose, Control continues speaking, voice coming in and out, distorted now like radio fuzz.
"Damn well better. Vacate is the wrong term. Your asses are... until I get my escalations. I'll dope you up to your eyeballs if..."
The line is cleared. Shield says, "Something is wrong. I'm not sure, but I think that the subject may have been messing with the phone, at least at the end. We should get out of the area, and quickly. Has anyone come up with anywhere we should go other than the cafe?" Barker lurches a bit and pads at his jacket, feeling for the source of the sensation. He opens his jacket and reaches his hand around, looking to find whatever it is and grab it, or pull it, or crush it, or something, anything. He looks awfully distressed. "What in the blazes?" Alarmed, Seals looks from Giles to Shields to Barker as several things seem to happen at once. "What? What is it?" He moves toward Barker, motioning as if to help with whatever the problem is. Not that he knows how he could help. Barker's fingers wrap around a small metal object about the size and dimensions of a pocket watch. Cryptic symbols shift about on its surface. When opened, the glass watch face displays a single hand and a series of increments, approximately 30, rather like a stopwatch of some sort. Aside from a release switch for the watch's cover, there are no other buttons or switches. The single hand shakes as it clicks back and forth across the first unnumbered increment. The mystery agent also notices a familiar manila folder hidden deep within the recesses of his jacket. "A watch," Barker ends quietly, holding it out and waving it in the light. "I didn't even know I had a watch." He slips his hand in the pocket it came from, then quickly pulls it out and closes his jacket, glancing briefly at the others. He adjusts his hat and flicks at the watch's glass cover. Chaffer divests himself of his corpulent alter ego and drifts through the streets, hoping to ferret out his compatriots as expeditiously as possible. His disguise dissolves like an image from a Dali painting as he approaches his fellow agents. "Well, it appears as though those insufferable Domingos have invited me, or Giles, to some sort of dinner at their manor in the Heights. I am unsure at this juncture if visiting them at their home will lead us to the HP, but it's worth it, I think. They don't seem to know, but perhaps someone else in attendance might." He clears his throat and lights a Chesterfield. "I agree," says Barker, not looking at Chaffer, seeming half elsewhere, "but for now, I think we should do what Shield suggests. Let's keep the Domingos open, and in the meantime, check out the cafe. It sounds like Control is pretty mad. We better get a move on." Tucker begins with Chaffer.
"You're the covert expert today, so do as you see fit. If you think that you can get more information from those two, go for it. Either way, I don't think a group of grave men in suits is welcome. We're heading for the cafe, and naturally, you should come with if you're not doing any deep cover work."
He addresses the rest of the group.
"New rule for this mission. If you get lost, separated, split up, or otherwise isolated from the rest of the team, we regroup here, on the streets. Why here? Because everyone here knows where it is now. We will later have to find a better spot, but this will do. Unless anyone's got a better idea, we're headed for the cafe. Unless you've got a good disguise, don't engage the HP if you can help it."
Barker nods. "Agreed." He follows Tucker, slipping the watch in his pocket. Seals follows along, though he looks rather concerned. "Guys, shouldn't we be arming ourselves with something a little more effective than a pocket watch before we go there? I know we have orders to escalate, but Look, once we get there, I can try to call up some weapons from control if you want. Bypassing the bar and hotel entirely, Tucker walks directly towards the cafe. No matter where he walks, that same smell pervades. Agents are welcome to follow him, or attempt to forge their own way through Blue City. Shields follows along, looking suspiciously around for the source of the smell and trying to covertly observe the people on the streets and see if any of them are paying special attention to him or the other agents. The agent's investigation yields only courteous nods and warm, friendly faces. In an almost macro-quantum kind of observer effect, Shields finds that as he pays attention to personalities, they come into focus and in turn acknowledge him. Whatever Chaffer slash Corey had done had been a sophisticated version of the same thing, essentially netting familiar personalities from the crowd. Seals follows Tucker to the cafe, absently rubbing his nose once or twice and grimacing a little. Chaffer says, "I shall head to the Delgado estate and see what I can discover there. I'll head to the cafe after. If I don't locate you there, I will return to the streets."
And the agents lived happily ever after. Okay, that's enough lacuna for today. Now let's get you tucked in. I don't care what time it is. What it is time for bed. No, you can't have another drink of water. Yes, I checked the closet for monsters. Don't worry, there are plenty. It's interesting how there's more to the story than just what happens. Because as you get more involved in those happenings, there's also this kind of inarticulable essence, this je ne sais quoi that accompanies it. Think about those parts that kind of absorb the information around you. It's something to do with how the human nervous system is wired, where instead of getting the specifics, it's all about the vibe, whether or not this is something that is vibing with you. As an explorer of the unconscious, I've always been interested in these emergent aspects that just kind of show up when you're doing creative work. In music, it's more than just the notes you play. Rhythm and timing are needed to temper those notes, which means that it's as much about the notes as it is the gaps between the notes that really puts everything in its right place. Between the Earth and the Moon, there's a sweet spot where both celestial bodies pull just enough to neutralize one another. This is called the Lagrange point, and it creates this kind of neutral area, a kind of gravitational hammock where you can just float along indefinitely. Similarly, there's this push and pull that creates a little pocket between two creators where new ideas can settle in. William Burroughs and Brian Geisen identified this as the third mind. In their book, Burroughs suggests this third mind occurs between any two creatives, even the creator and the person experiencing the creation. Burroughs found a way to experience this all alone by cutting up newspaper articles and other text, then aligning it randomly to say new things that came from neither the cutter upper or the original author. Somewhere in the chaos, among the nonsense, there was inspiration, even deep and meaningful insights that are as much about the observer as what it is that's being observed. That's because you'll find no meaning in the story without somehow experiencing it. You might even say a creator's job is to impart meaning, or at least to provide a suitable space so that you can experience a meaning of your own. Thank you for joining me and my fellow agents for this week's story. We've got you now. There's no point in trying to escape. So why don't you settle in and please join our Patreon to support this and other projects as we continue to expand our influence over the unsuspecting masses. You'll get access to all my classified materials and a bunch of stuff I made up, because let's be honest, they're all the same thing, really. Discover things the public just isn't ready to know. Experience the thrill of fictionally endangering yourself on a daily basis. Remain in a state of constant paranoia with none of the calories. Get bonuses, exclusive materials, early releases, and live broadcasts. All this and more at patreon.com/donfathom. That's DonFathom. We're on social stuff too. Check it all out.
We're Midnight Police on YouTube, TikTok, and X. We're on Threads too, though we're not really sure what it does yet. On Facebook and Instagram, we are The Midnight Police. That is The Midnight Police. Get it right. You've been warned. This week's episode was written by myself, Don Fathom, Matt Kimmel, Ian Bloom, and entities working under the pseudonyms Agent Chaffer, aka Older Cloud, Agent Seals, and Agent Shields. Today's episode was read by Don Fathom, Matt Kimmel, and Ian Bloom. Production, editing, music, sound effects, pretty much everything else was by me, Don Fathom. All content from Lacuna Part 1, Second Attempt, is copyrighted by Memento Mori Theatrics, all rights reserved and whatnot. This podcast is released under a Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, No Derivatives 4.0 license. Quick review, agents, that means you can copy and distribute Lacuna Slow Burn under the following conditions. Refrain from changing it or using it for commercial purposes and give us appropriate credit. Otherwise, we'll send the Spider-Man after you, or something even worse. Lawyers. That concludes this week's episode, Junior Agents. Now brush your teeth, turn off the lights, and for the last time, go to bed. Sweet dreams.